The growing sense of tragedy for the victims of the in-flight disintegration of the Russian charter airliner over Egypt last weekend is growing. It's becoming more public. You've seen funerals and grieving faces all over the media in Russia and throughout the world. But it took till yesterday for a very uncomfortable Russian President Vladimir Putin to address his people.
I would like again to express my condolences to the loved ones and the relatives of the victims. It is a great tragedy, and of course we are all with you in heart and soul. I would like to thank the people of St. Petersburg for their reaction and all Russians for their words of condolence.
The Kremlin appears officially unsatisfied by Egypt's downplaying of the open insurgency in the Sinai and claims of responsibility for the disaster by the Islamic State. Investigators from both Egypt and Russia search for a cause of the crash. There could be more information from the location of the cockpit voice recorder and the data recorder from the wreckage. But this whole event pushes Vladimir Putin into some uncharted domestic political territory. Is he really up to it? Joining me now is Masha Gessen, Russian-American journalist and author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She's also a 2015 Andrew Carnegie Fellow. Masha, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Is Vladimir Putin good at this hand-holding, this public grieving role as president? Seems very different from what we've seen him in over many, many years.
Well, he's not even really trying to enter the hand-holding role. I would even say it's a bit of an exaggeration to say that he addressed the public yesterday. What he did was there's a particular Kremlin genre, the televised working meeting. Or actually what's televised is a couple of minutes of a meeting. And he was meeting with the transport minister. And the topic of the meeting was the investigation into the causes of the crash. So while he's meeting with the minister, he sort of turns to the camera for a minute and says, I would like to once again express condolences. Why he's saying once again is not clear. He has not actually expressed condolences. What I think people expected, certainly what a lot of people wrote about on Russian blogs, is that they expected him to address the nation and not wait 2 days to do it, to address the nation the night of the catastrophe, and to probably fly to St. Petersburg, maybe light a candle with the people who were mourning. None of that happened. And in some ways, it's reminiscent of the very first major disaster of his presidency, the Kursk submarine sinking in August 2000, when Putin failed to interrupt his vacation in Sochi and didn't fly to Murmansk, where the submarine had gone down, until days after the tragedy, didn't meet with the relatives until days after the tragedy. And even then, it took some strong-arming on the part of his advisors. And his explanation then was that he didn't want to get in the way of things. And it was very clear then that he perceives himself as a sort of bureaucrat who shouldn't be grandstanding. When there's a tragedy, I think things now are a little different. He sees it as beneath him, as a man of action who should be investigating and directing people. He sees it as sort of undeserving of him to just express feelings.
Hmm. You know, I'd forgotten about the submarine case, and I'm wondering if for Russians there are glimpses of the very, very unstable and violent past of the Chechen period, which includes the horrible disaster and terrorist attack at Beslan, a sense that we're moving into a territory that may be a less stable territory than has been associated with Vladimir Putin's regime. And how does this disaster square with the public response to the Ukrainian plane, the plane that was shot down, the Malaysian plane that was shot down over Ukraine? That seems to have an eerie sort of echo as well.
Right. So Putin's reign has actually seen a number of terrorist attacks, many of them immediately forgotten. But basically, for the last 16 years, we haven't had more than 2 years go by without a major terrorist attack with major loss of life. So that makes it very easy to frame this plane crash as a likely terrorist attack. It's also very convenient because it's sort of it is in a way an equivalent, or it can be framed as the equivalent, of the Malaysian airliner disaster, which was shot down by using Russian weapons by pro-Russian troops, or as some people think, and I think so too, by basically Russian troops operating on Ukrainian territory. Russia has denied that this was a possibility. Russia has contradicted the results of the international investigation and has framed that whole investigation as a sort of world conspiracy against Russia, the world's conspiracy to frame Russia for the crash of the Malaysian airliner. Now the world conspiracy continues with the crash of the Russian airliner. Now the world with which Russia is at war is saying that it was probably a technical issue with the plane that brought it down. But Russia is expressing doubt in that. The meeting, the yesterday's televised meeting with the transport minister, again, the purpose of it was not to offer condolences, but to stress the need to conduct a thorough investigation. And the implication of that is we know there's something sinister going on. We know it's not a technical glitch, not a technical issue. Something was done to us.
Is there vulnerability for Putin here before we go?
I don't think there's vulnerability for him. I mean, he controls the country. He controls the media. Something like this doesn't weaken him. The question is, can he use it to mobilize the population? I think very likely he can.
Masha Gessen is Russian-American journalist and author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She's also a 2015 Andrew Carnegie Fellow. Thanks so much, Masha.
Thank you for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.